From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 381, Microsoft Azure Management Libraries with guest Scott Klein. Recorded Thursday, July 24th, 2014. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is Scott Klein, who's the Microsoft Data Platform Technical Evangelist and lives and breathes data. His passion for data technologies has brought him to Microsoft in 2011, which has allowed him to travel all over the globe evangelizing SQL Server and Microsoft's cloud data services. And prior to Microsoft, Scott was one of the first four SQL Azure MVPs, and even though those don't exist anymore, he still claims it. Welcome, sir.
It's good to be here. I appreciate the introduction.
And I appreciate an MVP who has crossed over. You know, that happens.
Every time we hear that, they start complaining. Ah, there goes another one.
Yeah. The MVP program, just sort of a recruiting arm.
You know, it sort of is a little bit because, you know, you think about what MVPs do.
Yeah.
And then when you need something like, hey, this guy does this. Let's see if we can get him, right? So, but it opens the door for other people to take, you know, the MVP spot and step up. So
sure, and clearly you were an enthusiast of data in the cloud. It's a complex topic. You know, lots of SQL Server people I find quite resistant to SQL Azure.
You know, and that's interesting you say that because we even today. So you know, when I started in the fall of 2011, and Azure was just sort of in its fledgling. And we spent a lot of time talking about, at least from the data side, you know, people were freaking out that, data in the cloud, there are a lot of hurdles that we had to get through. And one was, hey, as a DBA, I'm out of a job. And even today, almost 3 years later, we're still fighting that, right?
Which I find completely crazy. Somebody still has to manage the data. Who cares where it's stored?
Well, yeah, and that's exactly who cares. It's a paradigm shift, right? How you do things here might be a little different than how you do things in the cloud. But
yeah.
Who cares, right? Who cares where it's stored? There's still a need.
Yep, it's still a responsibility. There's still someone you got to call, and it is a skill set without a doubt.
Yeah, just because I don't know if it's it'd be interesting to do an in-depth analysis because I don't know if it's it's a pass offering, so Microsoft takes care of everything, or miseducation on that, or because you still have to, tune queries, you still have to, back up and restore, a lot of responsibilities.
But you don't have to put in service packs, which I would consider a feature. It's like, are you really sad that you don't have to patch your database anymore?
Well, exactly. You ask the question of, how many people like to do maintenance, on your SQL Server? Not one hand goes up.
Right. So that guy's weird. Get him out of here.
Exactly. Okay, who's afraid to raise their hand on that question? Right. How many people like PowerShell? How many people are afraid to admit they like PowerShell?
Right.
Type of question, right?
Well, and I have known people over the years, like there were rack and stackers, like they loved building out hardware. And so cloud was kind of threatening to one of their favorite pastimes.
Yeah, from an IT perspective, yes. But, how many DBAs really like to spend their time doing compliance stuff and patches and maintenance?
Patching is always scary, right? Like
it is. But maybe their fear is that, well, that's what keeps me employed.
Yeah.
Right.
And there's so many more productive things you could be doing.
Well, and that's the education that needs to happen, right? And this is why, for like last year, we spent all the tech eds everywhere. We had a whole session of tech ed on, SQL database for the DBA.
Right.
But the whole message was, stop worrying.
Yeah.
And here's how you do things. It's still prevalent that there's still, there's still some education that has to go on.
Yeah, how high does the backlog have to be before you're confident you're never going to run out of work?
Exactly. Yeah. That's right. Once you hit this threshold, then you can start updating your resume.
Yeah. But it's, I've never, ever seen any IT guy who was out of backlog. There's always more to do. And there's a whole class of work you just never get to. There's even just be getting beyond prevention into some of the analytics work, just trying to do things better, trying to understand systems better. There's so much to do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, and it's how do we educate the people on that? Because as a DB, you know, you're still, it's just like I said earlier, it's a paradigm shift. It's, you know, what you used to, how you did things on-prem. Mm-hmm. Now, how do you do that same function in the cloud?
Right.
And it's still there. It's now a little different. And so it's educating people on that. But yeah, like you say, there's always things to do. You will always need to, especially in Azure, in a shared environment.
Yep.
You have to, you know, there's more emphasis on one of the SQL Server MVPs over here said, you know, and that's a true statement. You can actually save money by tuning your queries.
Yes.
Right.
And you can measure that money.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You can measure that money. And, you know, on-prem, you can hide a lot of bad stuff just by throwing memory and CPU in it. And you can't do that in the cloud. So there is, like you say, plenty to do. It may be, more emphasis on other things like query tuning and saving money and things like that, from that perspective. But always, just always things you can do and improve in the cloud.
Absolutely.
From that perspective.
So there's been a bunch of interesting stuff coming out around Azure lately that is less like new features per se and more about being able to extend the management capabilities.
Yep.
So this Microsoft Azure Management Libraries, MAML, which is a...
MAML.
Save me.
When you say that, you're thinking like whale.
Yeah, but it sounds like it's a dev tool. Is it really?
You know, it can be perceived that way. It almost is a dev tool because if you think about how you used to do things very early on, right? So if I needed, from a management perspective, when Azure first came out, or even not even until not that long ago, you know, what were my options for managing?
Right.
Programmatically. And the big one was, so, you know, it really two buckets, in my opinion. You had, you know, the REST APIs.
Yeah.
And then you had PowerShell.
Right.
And it was, it's interesting to see how Microsoft is now, you know, getting very ramped up and pushing much harder than PowerShell. But those that, you know, how many developers really know PowerShell?
Yeah, not many, really. That seems to be more the tool of the operations guy.
Yeah, exactly, the operations guy. But then you had these developers who are, okay, I would like to programmatically, you know, spin up a website or create an Azure SQL, at a SQL database server or things like that. And what were the options? And it was, now I have to write REST.
Really?
Some knew it. So there's a whole lot of what other options are there? Well, that's about it. And so I think these new libraries, MAML libraries, in my opinion, are a godsend.
Right.
Because it makes, like you say, I think it makes management a tool, almost a tool set.
Yeah. Well, and it now gives us the ability as ops guys to help spec out a set of features that a developer could really build too. I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily the focus you want to take with MAML, but I find that interesting. Rather than just writing a PowerShell script, there's sort of a dance between who should write what and how things should be created. I'm all for automation.
Yeah.
And to me, this seems like this is an automation tool set.
It absolutely is. Absolutely is. And that was, I think, the messaging for behind PowerShell is, you know, from an ops guy, automate a lot of these responsibilities and functions that I have to perform, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what do you do? How do you do that from the developer side? And almost, you know, do we want to give the developer that kind of power?
Right.
But at least now we can there's a lot of things now. So this is just really a wrapper around these rest calls. And so, you know, you get the benefits of Visual Studio, things like IntelliSense.
Mm-hmm.
And there's power behind that. What I used to have to do in about, you know, 50 lines of code, I can now do in about 2 lines of code.
Nice.
Right. And it very nice, very powerful. And it allows me to now do automate these functions a lot better. You know, things like, you know, how do I spin up a website? And I would love to see and from the database side, you know, there's, you know, if you were to compare, you know, these are all-encompassing management libraries. So it allows me to take advantage of a lot of these, a lot of things, Azure all up. Things
right.
like not just, you know, storage and compute and scheduling and service bus and storage and things like that. And a lot
right.
of that, you know, from the, even from the SQL side. You know, so these are quite powerful. You know, websites is a huge one too. What can I do with websites? How can I automatically scale up, programmatically scale up based on certain criteria, not have to go into the portal? All right? How can I, you know, go from, you know, one instance to 10 instances, or how can I, you know, same thing with a virtual machine and
nice.
Things like that.
Now I can see this. I've seen more and more in the apps that I'm working with where the development team and the operations team are working really close together. They end up building a dashboard in the app.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely.
For the administrator, you know, and it's got a few gauges on it about health of various things, and it's got a few knobs on it. So I could see elasticity landing there. Like you said, instead of having to go to the Azure console for that, to have my own console and be able to sort of tweak and tune, especially if you're going to get to automated elasticity. Because every time I look at automated elasticity, it depends on the app. What is the measure for you that says it's time for another instance? Somebody's got to write some code behind that.
That's exactly it. Because very early on, we would talk about, you know, in websites, and we would talk about elasticity. And everywhere we went, people would say, why doesn't Microsoft just scale for us?
Right.
And the answer is, well, your threshold is going to be completely different than somebody else's threshold.
Yeah.
We can't define what your load is or what your threshold is. So we give you the tools to do that. And it's all about elasticity. What constitutes scaling from, you know, adding a node, adding an instance in your environment?
And taking one away, you know, like...
Exactly. You know, yeah,
it's got to work both ways.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah, good point. So, you know, and saving that money when I scale back down, right?
Sure. No, I just love that idea of being able to build a dashboard. It's showing, you know, what's the, you could actually show the threshold of how far am I away from lighting another instance, or how close am I from taking one away.
And these management libraries make that much easier now.
Right.
To do. You know, and it's interesting because if you look at, there's things like, yeah, and you, I think you hit the nail on the head is, you know, you now can do this much easier, build your own dashboard, because
right.
one of the things that we've been toying around with, or me personally, is going, you know what would be really nice is if we had a Windows 8 or a Windows Phone app that gave me that kind of information.
Yeah.
But it was really hard to do
yeah.
with the rest. But now these management libraries, you probably do that in an afternoon.
So on the SQL Azure side, like I totally get that for websites.
Right.
It's relatively rare to launch a new SQL Azure instance. Unless I'm doing testing, I don't know, how often do you end up building new ones that are maybe short-lived or elastic that way?
If you were to, you know, stack these and rank these in terms of importance, I think you're right. You know, I would use these from a, you know, I think this from the SQL side. There's really not, if you think about what you can do in the portal.
Yep.
There's not a whole lot. It's let me create a server. Let me add firewall rules. Let me add create a database. But I think as we start seeing, well, let me say it this way. I think this lays the groundwork
mm-hmm.
for what's coming. For example, like they just announced, and like we were just talking about scalability, right?
Right.
They just announced these service tiers. So. Prior to that, there wasn't a whole lot I really needed to do. Create a server, create a database, firewall rules, blah, whatever. But now you have these new service tiers. And so, you know, can I, based on need and scale and things like that, maybe go from a, you know, a standard to a basic, or, you know, a P, was it, from a premium P0 to a P1 and back down based on things like that, right? It opens up a bunch of opportunity.
Oh, interesting. So the same idea of saving money, essentially, dialing it back when the load is low and dialing it up when the load is high.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I don't know if that's built in, but, now, because we just announced this, but I think the possibility's there.
Sure.
And think about it in terms of, we just did a video on Channel 9. So not to self-promote, but, we do this data show on Channel 9. And
sure.
We have, if you think about database scalability, in the cloud, database scalability, that elasticity we were just talking about.
Yeah.
Not just going from a P1 to a P2 back down to a P0 or something like that, but, the concept of sharding.
Yeah.
Right. What can, once we have, things in place or a library or something like that built in, how can these MAML libraries take advantage of that and provide that scalability? So, I think there's things that they can plug in later that this opens the door for.
Sure.
Right? So it's on the SQL side, I think you're right, it's fairly light, but crap, another 6 to 12 months, I think you'll find it opens the doors for some very interesting enhancements to the SQL side.
Well, I definitely see, we've mostly been focusing on the elasticity angle, and the fact that SQL Azure is moving in this direction of giving you a different tier of performance depending on how much you want to spend is exciting. So that certainly
yes.
plays into that angle. And the other piece of this is automated tests. Yep. Right now I'm looking at tools like Chef and Puppet to light up the group of instances required to run an app in a test laboratory. But it'd be kind of yep. nice to just leave that as part of the code base.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah, absolutely.
So that I could, it's just part of my build process. Off that goes, and it works pretty much the same way.
Yep.
You can see this. Yep. This would even end up on my dashboard as well, because I have this problem. We get these complex systems where a given transaction is popping through three or four or five different tiers, and something's not working. So you fire a test transaction. You just bang. Okay, fire this test transaction. It won't actually change any data, but it'll go all the way back and there again, and you can sort of get a green light, red light on that. The fact that
yeah.
you could build that to the point where it says, light up a new set of the app. Give me a whole set of instances and run a flow on that and tell me this thing is behaving as well. That's really interesting to me that, we stopped thinking about physical servers. We're just talking about instances. So we can
yeah.
make as many as we need to test anything we want to test.
Absolutely. I think that's a very good scenario, a very excellent example, a scenario where let me just spin something up very quick, and when I'm done, tear it down and,
yeah.
Scale, and, what's the, define those thresholds and things like that. Excellent example.
Yeah, very powerful stuff. And most of the time when you're looking at that, you're looking at some kind of third-party tool. The fact that I could keep the code base in-house for a certain audience kind of appealing. I don't know how much you've thought in the context of MAML against a product like Chef.
I haven't, but I think that's something we need to look at very closely.
Mm-hmm. Because Chef's code is Ruby, which for some people is awesome, but for some people is like, new language. And Chef's and Ruby's great at calling to REST calls. So, if you do want to do automation against Azure, there's no question you could do it that way. But if you don't want to introduce another language into the equation, maybe my guys would rather live in C#.
Well, but it's really interesting. It's what are the libraries? What can this library talk to, or what languages can talk to this library?
Right.
What's the extensibility of this library? I think is the question, and being able to do things like Chef, and I think that opens up a world of possibilities. And some of these, just to be completely transparent, some of these are still in preview, but
sure.
We're version one, and if enough of this feedback comes back, I think there's plenty of opportunity here.
Well, I got to think, there's a group of listeners out there right now who are very concerned about DevOps. They've been told this is important and they do want to be better, and they're trying to decide what products to buy and what to build and so forth. This seems like another tool in the toolkit to say, hey, maybe more of this could be done in-house rather than go external.
Well, and I think that's the goal with this, right, is to make it very easy and do a lot of this in-house. So they definitely, I think your comment early on was very much, this is just another tool that needs to be, that we need to pay attention to.
Right.
Especially as, you know, if you start thinking about all the services that are going on in Azure,
yeah,
to keep adding things, you know, what's the one place we can go to start managing these?
Yeah, the pool gets deeper and deeper and deeper here, and so being able to do all of this is pretty important.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I think there's a whole conversation to be had here around testing, and then there's a whole one to be had about, the automated scaling.
I think that's where the power comes in is just the automation of elasticity.
Yeah.
How do I scale? How do I define those thresholds? What happens? Because previously to this, it was difficult. You know, I either had to have my DevOps side do it through PowerShell and pay attention to that.
Yeah.
Or, you know, as a dev, that's where, you know, I'm very interested in that. So I think this lends to better opportunity there.
There also seems to open a door, maybe this is more of a dev conversation, to just being able to build products for people, to build software as a service products against the Azure stack so that you actually have a program where a new customer comes in and can light up instances. Maybe I could even use this for a self-serve portal to my internal users. So devs want to light up test instances.
Well, and that's exactly it. That's what I was alluding to earlier, right?
Yeah.
Is why can't I? This now lets me very quickly in an afternoon, almost in an afternoon, it's probably an exaggeration, but, you know, because I say this because very early, years ago, right when Azure was coming out, probably 2 or 3 years ago, there was this little Tray app that would monitor, and it was very, very light. It didn't do a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
But this now, and it probably because you had to do, the code was hitting because you had to do a lot of rest. This now opens it up so I can write a very simple Windows Phone app that tells me, that gives me that dashboard.
Right.
Right. And you know, I can commoditize something like that and then take that, make it available, and people can extend that. But it gives me the ability to very quickly give me that information on a mobile or a tablet or whatever medium we want to, but give me that dashboard look and feel and almost commoditize that. You know, put that app in the store.
Yeah, and make things that much simpler for anybody who wants to manage things.
Yeah, exactly.
It's funny what we're trying to do on our phones these days.
Well, yeah, imagine walking around, all of a sudden getting a push notification on your phone going, hey, you know, you're reaching your threshold on this, or we just had to scale up, you know, due to whatever load, right?
Right.
I think there's definite power behind that.
Yeah, you may want to have a physical gate to that scale up and point.
Yep.
But the fact that you can pump it to a phone so somebody could be anywhere and go, yep, okay, do it.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's, you know, really,
the things we've been thinking about for a while. These libraries, talking with Brady about that, the PM for this, and just saying this opens up a lot. Is exactly, I get a push notification on my phone going, do we scale up? Yes, no, right? Or in an instance, say no, don't scale up, but maybe move this instance to from a A1 to A2 or something like that, right?
Yeah.
So that kind of flexibility.
More cores, not more instances.
Exactly. Yeah, because maybe it's not, you know, worth going, yeah, just give me another instance, but maybe just let me just go scale up for a second.
Although I've found, I don't know if you've run across this, when a team was coming into a weekend where they're going to do a big promotion and they're worried about tipping over, they didn't do automated elasticity. What they did was just light a whole bunch of instances because they don't cost that much if you're not using them. You know, just having them present is a certain fee, but it ends up that under load, it's bandwidth and CPU charges that are the substantive things. So they've literally fired like an extra 10 instances and then just watched to see if they actually got loaded down.
Yeah.
But it's funny, isn't it? You know, this over-provision, go nuts. Something you'd never do in the real world because that's buying $100,000 worth of hardware that you may or may not use. We used to be really careful about our math around that. Now we're just like, fire up more.
Yeah, exactly. Because I only, you know, if I don't need them, I can give them away and I, you know, don't need them, shut them down or give them back, right? Fire up 20, we don't care. And then, okay, we don't have that load, so, you know, scale back.
Well, we're on marketing's budget right now. It's their big promotion. Sure, fire more.
Exactly. Yeah, not our budget.
That's not my budget. All they said was don't fail. They didn't say be cost effective. They said don't fail. Okay, I won't fail.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that's the beauty of this is you know, scale up, and I, you know, it's almost destined not to fail.
Right. Be able to move fast.
Yeah.
Well, this is, to me, this is really exciting because it does, I'm getting more and more excuses to find for operations to talk to development. That's what this tool feels like to me. Is rather than me going off, staying in my ops world and just writing PowerShell or involving some kind of third-party app to deal with these things, to have development part of that conversation to work with these libraries to take advantage of them. I think that's really compelling.
Well, it, you know, it opens up, you're absolutely right. It opens up the possibilities because, you know, where does the responsibility of that, you know, elasticity fall?
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's, you know, prior to this, it was PowerShell. It was the ops guys. Mm-hmm. Now this opens up you can have that discussion. Well, and you can, it gives the opportunity to now be a little more automated and, you know, maybe spread that responsibility out or give it to, you know, the developer, or it just opens up another, I think, other opportunities or other options.
A broader conversation to me, it seems very powerful that you would actually be able to talk about how we would control this as part of the app and increase visibility to it.
Yeah.
I've now come to appreciate that the dashboarding an app, when ops ask for a dashboard in an app, you should throw a party. Because it's actually ops making a request of development for something that will help them run the app better. That's a really good day.
Yeah, and it's interesting we keep coming back to that, right? The dashboard. And if you talk to anybody here, it was the turning point was once we even internally had a dashboard that we can get insights into our ops.
Yeah.
Right. Things turned, you know, that's when things turned around, and it's that insight into through the dashboard that is critical.
Yeah, and it, there's a bunch of layers to that, right? That part of that is the conversation these guys need to have to even build one. What do we need to measure? How do we best present it? How does that code actually work? And then the side effect of that feedback, once you can see those things, is how the app changes from there. Like it's a beginning of a very powerful feedback cycle.
But you can at least get started, right? And that's the point, is we can now at least very quickly get started and then tweak as we need.
Yeah, and keep going along there. And shelling out to PowerShell, while powerful, doesn't have that same sense of integration.
I agree with you.
There's right. two sides to that, right? It's presenting information. It's the gauge and the knob. Right, the gauge that tells you where the app thinks it's at, and the knob where you change what it should be doing next.
Yeah, it's the visual component. Let me in a quick glance know what's going on.
Yeah, and have confidence in the app.
That's the important piece is the confidence, right?
Up to a few years ago, the only time I ever got the conversation with it to have a dashboard is when we were doing cross team integration. Mainly when we would make senior developers be on call for outages. So, because this is exactly what happened, right? The operations guys on a Saturday, it's always a Saturday, start having a performance problem, typically, right? It feels like we're spiraling in. We're going to go down. Yeah. And you go through your usual routines. And then it's like at the third tier of concern, now you call that senior dev resource. And now they get involved and they're watching. And they don't write code because there's no code they could write that could make the situation better, but they do have insight into how the app works. So their opportunity to sort of look at the set of problems that are going on under load and then, you know, have a conversation about what it could be helped a lot.
Right.
But almost every time after an incident like that, the dev says, these guys just don't know enough about what's going on inside of the app during a crisis. We got to give them something. So they could understand. And that was, over and over again, that'd be the birth of the dashboard.
Yep. Yeah. And it's impossible to do almost with PowerShell. But, you know, through these libraries, it makes it much easier to do. And you get that insight. And it's all about getting insights into that data.
Yeah.
What's going on? And at a glance, holy cow, I'm hitting a threshold or I'm not getting that elasticity. I need things like that. But at a quick glance, in fact, if you walk into building 35, or it used to be building 35, you know, there was the Azure dashboard right there, where you, you know, right in almost in the lobby.
Where
you
get, wow.
You know, I know what's going on in all the, you know, even, you know, the Azure data centers. What's going on, right? Quick dashboard right there.
Yeah, and people love them, right? OpsMan's great for that.
Yeah. You know, it's what's, you know, that's what makes decision-making happen.
Yeah. But, you know, the funny part is making that dashboard meaningful means them agreeing on metrics. What does busy look like? What are the thresholds? Like, actually making those decisions.
Yeah.
Arguably more valuable in the app you build in the end, but just knowing we agree on what a relevant metric is on the health of this app.
Yeah. Well, that's part of the discussion, right? Because at least we're getting the data. At least we can visually see what's going on. But then we can have that discussion, well, what do these numbers mean? And things like that. But it's getting that, and it's easily, like through these management libraries, easily getting that data.
Yeah. And being able to make changes and know how to change things.
Rapidly, right? Things that you can't really do with PowerShell. And PowerShell is powerful. I don't want to knock it, but...
Yep.
Through these management libraries, it makes getting that data, getting those insights, you know, building those dashboards and getting inside of that data much more efficient.
And I mean, in the set of services that are in MAML now, and this only came out in the build time frame, right? So just a couple of months ago.
Yeah, it was interesting. So in early April, they announced the 1.0 of some of these libraries. Mm-hmm. But, you know, keeping in mind that some of these are still in preview, like the SQL components, those are still in preview, but, you know, should release pretty quick. You know, it's July. I'd have to go check to see if those have released. But, you know, yeah, if you look at the amount of these services, you know, there's, compute and network and scheduling and service bus and storage and websites and SQL. And, you know, as you start looking at some of these, this will be continually being added on to.
Right. And most of these libraries, again, wrappers over the REST services, are about creating new things, configuring new things, like making changes. But there is the monitoring library as well, which I think is still in preview.
Yeah, correct. That's correct. Yep. The monitoring one. So, yep, that's still in preview. Well, at least according to this documentation, I'd have to double check to see if it's released, but I think it's still in preview, and maybe talk to Brady to see when that's coming out.
It's all in motion, and it is a two-way street across these libraries. Like, yeah, this could be the dashboard creating toolkit here.
Oh, it absolutely is. This is one of those things you need in your developer utility belt.
Yeah.
Along with others, but you know, this is definitely they talked about this heavily at build.
Yeah. But most of the time, this is not a tool a dev's necessarily going to want. It's not something they necessarily want to build. This is, you need to build stuff for tests and this will help you, or you need to build stuff for ops and this will help you.
Exactly. So
I think it's important that IT folks know about this, because they got to ask for it if they want to get it.
Well, if they want that insight that we talked about, if they want, you know, to programmatically develop that, you know, elasticity that we talked about, then this is something that they need to have in their utility belt.
Nice. Scott, thanks so much for coming to talk to me.
Oh, Richard, this is a pleasure. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for asking.
You bet. And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.